Tolliver went back to his office. He needed to think about what he was going to do when Jensen came back to town. Even if Jensen was 20 years older than he had been the last time Tolliver had seen him, that didn't mean the man wasn't as dangerous as a grizzly bear in heat. Even old gunfighters could still manage a quick draw once in a while, and Tolliver didn't want to make the mistake of underestimating Jensen, not when his life depended on it. He closed his eyes, but instead of making plans for Jensen's return, he thought about the last time he'd seen the man. Buck had been just over 12 years old that day, back in his hometown of Homestead, Colorado Territory. It was the first time his older brother had let him ride into town with him and the other hands on his daddy's ranch. After he'd helped him load up the buckboard with wire and nails and lumber, Jack Tolliver had given Buck a nickel and told him to buy some peppermint candy sticks or maybe some licorice while he and the men stopped by the saloon for a couple of drinks. Buck waited for nearly an hour, moving around the general store and looking at all the fine merchandise the owner had brought in by big freight wagons from Denver and Pueblo. Finally, he started getting antsy, wondering why his brother and the other men were taking so long. He'd spent all of his money and the candy was just about all gone, and the owner of the store was looking at him funny, wondering why the skinny kid was hanging around so long and not buying anything else. He stuck his last peppermint stick in his mouth and walked out of the general store toward the saloon. Jack would box his ears for interrupting his drinking. But Buck knew his daddy had already warned Jack several times about his drinking, and he didn't want Jack to get in trouble. He worshipped his brother, and if he could keep him out of trouble, then some sore ears was a small price to pay. He looked ahead and saw two men dressed all in buckskins come out of the saloon and climb up on what looked like Indian ponies, ones with the spotted rumps. Buck smiled. They were about the dirtiest men he'd ever seen in town. He figured they must be mountain men because his daddy had told him about them once. He'd said they were misfits and couldn't hold down regular jobs, so they lived up in the mountains, eating berries and wild animals like the Indians did. In fact, Buck thought, these men looked like wild animals themselves, with their dirty clothes, wildly disarranged hair, and heavy beards, and Indian moccasins on their feet instead of leather boots. As the two men jerked their horses' heads around, the saloon bat wings flew open. Jack and a few of the men from the ranch came bursting out. Buck started to yell hello until he saw that Jack and the others were so drunk that they were almost staggering as they pushed their way out onto the boardwalk, elbowing the citizens aside. Buck stopped. His eyes opened wide when he saw that Jack and the other men had their guns in their hands and were pointing them at the backs of the two mountain men who were riding slowly down the street. Jack fired first. Neither of the men on horseback were hit. Quicker than a rattlesnake striking, the younger man with the sandy yellow-colored hair twisted in his saddle as he filled his hand with iron. His first shot took Jack in the chest, knocking him back with outspread hands.
Jack! Jack, no!
Buck raced forward, ignoring the smoke and loud explosions of gunfire up ahead of him. He raced to kneel next to his brother and took his face in his hands.
Jack! Jack!
Finally, there was silence. Buck glanced around to see Joe and Sam and Larry all lying on the ground with blood pumping from bullet holes in their bodies. None of the men from the ranch were left alive.
Yeah!
Buck grabbed the pistol from Jack's lifeless hand. He stood up and whirled around, holding the big Walker Colt in both hands and prying the hammer back with his right thumb. The man with the yellow hair aimed his pistol at Buck, but he pulled it up when he saw he was just a boy. A boy who still had a peppermint stick in the corner of his mouth. Buck took aim, blinking away his tears. He grinned fiercely when he saw blood spurt from the man's left shoulder as the force of the slug turned him half around in his saddle. The older man, the man with a face full of gray whiskers and a stink on him Buck could smell from 10 feet away, leveled a long, Sharps .50 caliber buffalo gun at Buck. To Buck, a hole in the barrel of that rifle looked to be big enough to put his fist in. But he didn't care. Let the son of a bitch shoot. He lowered his pistol between his knees and again used both hands to pry the hammer back, hoping to get one more shot off before the old man killed him. He glanced up and saw the man with the yellow hair hold up his hand.
No!
The old man just shook his head as he lowered his rifle barrel. The old man spurred his horse forward between Buck and the man who'd shot his brother, and he swung his rifle like he was swinging an axe. The barrel hit Buck on the temple and put his lights out. It was the last thing he remembered until he woke up a day later out on the ranch with his daddy leaning over him. Tolliver came back to the present now and unconsciously fingered the scar on his left temple that remained as a souvenir that day. His father had told him the man who'd killed his brother was named Smoke Jensen, and that the sheriff had cleared the two men of all charges since Jack and the other men from the ranch had fired first and had fired at the other men's backs without giving them any warning. He explained to Buck that Jack and the others had gotten stinking drunk and had begun to make fun of the two mountain men and the way they looked and the way they smelled. When the old man had grabbed Jack by the front of his shirt and slapped him back and forth with his open hand and then threw him to the ground like a child, it had started a full-scale fight between the two strangers and the men from the ranch. In spite of being outnumbered 2-1, the two mountain men had kicked the ranchers' butts, leaving them bruised and bleeding on the floor when they walked out of the saloon. But, his daddy said, shaking his head, Jack wouldn't let it go. He had a snoot full of whiskey, and it made him liquor brave, as his daddy put it. He and the others had tried to backshoot the two mountain men, and had paid for their foolishness with their lives. Buck's daddy had added he didn't ever want Buck to mention Jack's name to him again, and he hadn't. But Buck had never forgotten the vacant stare in his brother's eyes on that fateful day. He vowed then to someday make things right, and to make that Jensen fellow pay for shooting his brother down like a stray dog in the street. It didn't matter to Buck Tolliver how much time had passed. For the past 20 years, he prayed that someday he would come face to face with the bastard that killed his brother. And now his prayers were about to be answered. Of course, he wasn't going to make the same mistake his brother did and go up against Jensen while he was drunk. No, sir. He would make careful plans and make sure that when he faced Jensen down and killed him, he would have the edge. As he thought on it, he realized that Jensen had one weakness he probably hadn't considered. The man he dropped off at the doctor's was obviously a good friend. Maybe Tolliver could use that fact against the mountain man. It certainly deserves some serious consideration. Cal was just finishing his breakfast in the dining room of the Palace Hotel in Pueblo when Smoke Jensen walked into the room.
You have any luck?
Smoke had left him almost 2 hours earlier to go to the telegraph office. He wanted to wire Big Rock and have Sheriff Monte Carson be on the lookout for the horses they were going to ship by rail car later in the day. He also wanted to wire the town a payday and see if there had been any change in Pearlie's condition.
Not much. I got an answer back from Big Rock. Monty said he'd take care of the horses and wished us luck with Pearlie. Said the entire town would be praying for his recovery.
Well, I suspect they will. Pearlie's a right popular feller in Big Rock. He don't have an enemy in the world, far as I know.
Yeah, you're right there, Cal. I've never heard anyone speak a word against Pearlie in all the time I've known him. And that's something to say about a man who's lived here as long as Pearlie has.
Did you manage to get a message to the dentist? Did you hear back from him about Pearlie's condition?
Yeah, the doc sent a wire saying Pearlie was no better. But the good news is he isn't any worse either. He said about all we could hope for was that every day Pearlie lives makes him a little stronger and gives him a better chance to survive the bites.
That evening, just before dusk, Sheriff Buck Tolliver was sitting in his office, staring out of his window as he had been for most of the day. He kept turning things over in his mind, trying to figure out the best way to cause Smoke Jensen the same pain and suffering he'd gone through all these years whenever he thought of his dead brother and the terrible way he died, choking on his own blood in the dirt of the street of his hometown. He knew that he could shoot the man when he came back to see about a sick friend, catching him unaware, but that somehow seemed too easy. That bastard wouldn't suffer near enough, no matter how long it took him to die. No. Tolliver would have to figure something else out for the gunman. Something that would make him have the same sort of nightmares Buck had been living with for almost 20 years. If only he could do something that would hurt the gunman to the soul, as his brother's death had him, Tolliver figured he'd be satisfied. When Tolliver saw Hezekiah Bentley leave his office and make his way toward the Dog Hole Saloon to have his dinner, he had an idea. He knew how he could make Jensen suffer as he had. And even better, he'd do it so he could be there to taunt him with it. And the man wouldn't be able to do anything about it, no matter how much he suspected Tolliver might be behind it. Tolliver grabbed his hat and followed Bentley into the saloon. He wondered if the doc was going to go back to his drinking. But he noticed he shook his head when one of the girls approached his table and offered him a drink. Tolliver looked around the saloon, hunting for the reason he'd come into the place. Sure enough, Tolliver's cousin, Blackie Johnson, was at his usual place at the bar. Tolliver caught his eye and motioned him to come outside and talk. As he waited outside the bat wings for Johnson, Tolliver gave a silent prayer that the man wouldn't be too drunk to do what he was going to ask him to do.
Damn!
Blackie stumbled through the bat wings. He grinned stupidly at Tolliver and held up his hand in greeting.
Yo, Buck, what's going on?
Come on over here, Blackie. We need to talk. I got a job for you to do.
Oh, Buck, it's the middle of the night and I'm busy with some friends in the saloon.
First off, it's not the middle of the night, you fool. It's barely dusk. Second of all, you ain't got no friends in the saloon or nowhere else unless you're the one doing the buying. Now here's what I want you to do. There's a gent over at Doc Bentley's who's sleeping in one of his patient rooms.
Oh, you mean the man who got himself snake bit?
Yeah. I want you to go over there and sneak in and put his lights out for good.
You mean kill him? Why? He ain't never done nothing to me.
You remember my brother Jack?
Sure, Buck. He was always real nice to us when we was youngins. He hardly ever beat up on us. At least not in no serious way.
That man lying in there is a close friend of the bastard who shot my brother down like a dog, Blackie. And I want you to go in there and kill him. Send that man a message for me.
Well, sure, Buck. Since you put it that way, don't know, make no never mind to me. Buck, why don't you do it yourself since it was your brother you killed?
Because I'm going to be in the saloon having a drink with Doc Bentley so no one will suspect I had anything to do with it, Blackie. Now, you going to do what I ask or are you going to stand out here jawing the night away?
Blackie nodded and turned and took another step. Then he stopped and turned back around.
Now what?
How do you want me to do it? Gun? Knife? Or just strangle him?
I need you to shoot him, Blackie, so everyone can hear when it happens. And they'll know I was in the saloon and couldn't have been involved. So just go over there and put a gun between the man's eyes, blow his head off, and then hightail it out of the house and down the back alley until you're a couple of streets away from the docks.
Blackie turned and Tolliver stopped him with a hand on his arm.
And Blackie, make sure you don't get his brains and blood splattered all over you, all right? Put a pillow over his head or something before you shoot him.
All right, Buck. I ain't no idiot. You didn't have to tell me that.
And just head on home when you're done, and I'll check in with you tomorrow.
Blackie looked back over his shoulder to make sure Buck was gone and wasn't looking. Then he pulled a small pint of whiskey from his hip pocket. It wasn't that he was afraid of his cousin. Well, not exactly. There was just no need to stir up Buck's temper unnecessarily, that was all. He pulled the cork and upended the bottle, drinking it until it was completely empty. He only weaved a little as he moved back and forth from side to side of the small street.
Damn, Buck. Just as I was getting a good snort on, he has to come to me and tell me to go to work killing a feller, even though he don't mean nothing to me. Yeah, I don't care if this gent killed his brother Jack or not. Jack wasn't all that good to me anyhow, always telling me and Buck what to do as if he was our pappy instead of Buck's brother. Just the asshole right just to get himself all shot up because he couldn't mind his own business and went and picked on a man tougher than he was. Buck should have realized that, because Daddy sure did. Of course, Buck has been pretty nice to me, all things considered. Even if he is being inconsiderate, making me go to work in the middle of the night like this. Yeah, might as well do as he asks. There'll be hell to pay next time he asks to stop somebody from pressing charges on me or something.
Like he walked up the stoop to Doc Bentley's back door.
Yeah, time to get this over with. Buck will never let me forget it if I don't kill this stump sucker for him. Or what's worse, he won't give me no more of that gold money he's been taking from the miners around here.
Blackie stumbled on the top step and fell against the back door, causing the bell the doctor had hung up to ring.
I can't make so much noise, Blackie, or you'll wake the dead. I forgot, he's not dead yet.
Now, just which way is that bedroom?
He fumbled around in the semi-darkness, banging into a table and knocking a lamp over on its side. Up ahead in the bedroom, Pearly tried to open his eyes, but the lids were stuck shut with dried tears. He sighed, figuring he'd wait a few more minutes before climbing out of his bedroll and helping Cal and Smoke get breakfast ready. Blackie finally found the door to the bedroom and pulled the door open, holding his six-shooter out in front of him. As a cloud passed from in front of the moon, soft light filtered in the window, and he could see a man sleeping soundly on the bed in front of him.
That must be the galoot Buck was talking about.
He saw there was no one else in the room.
That's good. Wouldn't want to kill the wrong galoot, now would we, Blackie, old man?
He tiptoed over to stand next to the bed, and he eared the hammer back on his Colt. Then, he hesitated as the moonlight struck a pocket watch and some silver in a wallet on the bedside table off to the side, along with a holster and rig with a knife in a scabbard.
Hey, looky there. The chip may have some real money in that wallet, and that watch has got to be worth $4 or $5 over in Pueblo. I better get it before I shoot him, because afterwards I won't have no time.
He turned, letting his gun point away from Pearly, and took a step toward the bedside table, reaching out with his left hand to grab the money and watch.
Oh, some bitch.
When the man heard him and whirled around, Pearly reached up and grabbed the pistol with both his hands. Blackie jerked at his gun, trying to free it from the sick man's grasp, but as he did so, he stumbled over his own feet and fell backward against the side table, dragging the half-awake Pearly with as they tumbled to the floor. Pearly's holster and rig fell off the table and banged him in the head, causing stars to blossom and shine behind his eyelids. Pearly could feel the barrel of the Colt turning toward him, and he was too weak to stop it. He knew with a sudden crystal clarity that he was going to be dead in a very few seconds if he didn't do something about it. His eyes fell on the knife in his scabbard, lying next to him on the floor. As quick as a wink, Pearly let go of the pistol with one hand and grabbed the hilt of the knife, jerking it out of the scabbard. Suddenly, Pearly's head felt light and his vision darkened, and he fell into a dark pool at his feet, unconscious again. When an hour passed and Tolliver didn't hear a gunshot, he began to get worried.
Something wrong, Buck? You look like you swallowed a frog or something.
Tolliver forced a smile and shook his head. He was not used to Doc being this observant in the evenings. By now, he was usually well on his way to passing out for the night.
No, I just gotta get to making my rounds before it gets too late.
Well, I guess you're right, Buck. Hell, it's getting late and I got a couple of teeth to pull in the morning.
Bentley and Tolliver got to their feet.
I'll just walk along with you to make sure you get home all right.
All right, but I really don't need a chaperone, Buck, since I haven't had any whiskey at all and only one beer all night. I think I can make it 2 blocks to my house by myself.
Well, I gotta go that way anyhow, so I might as well walk along with you by myself.
Yeah, so long as you don't think I need it.
The street the saloon was on went right by Bentley's back door, and when the Doc and Tolliver got there, Tolliver noticed the back door was ajar.
Uh-oh. Someone's left your back door open, Doc.
No, that's just probably the wind blew it open. Nobody tried to rob me. Hell, everybody knows I don't have a pot to piss in, Buck.
Nevertheless, let me take a look around before you come in.
Oh, all right. Just don't take all night. I'm tired and want to get into my bed.
Tolliver eased the back door open and slipped inside. He moved through the house, keeping his gun pointed out in front of him.
Blackie, you there?
When he heard no response, he moved slowly into the bedroom. And he saw the two men lying on the floor in a spreading pool of blood.
Jesus.
Blackie's eyes stared slightly up at Buck in silent accusation, with Pearlie's knife still embedded in his throat. And Tolliver knew he was as dead as yesterday's news.
You dumb son of a bitch. You couldn't even kill a man who was already half dead.
Tolliver looked over at Pearlie, and he could see his chest moving slowly up and down as he breathed. He moved quickly to the bureau by a side wall and took out Pearlie's trousers. He pulled Pearlie up into the bed and slipped his pants on, pulling him up under the nightshirt and fastening the belt, making sure not to get any of the already clotted blood that was covering the sleeping man on him. Looking around to make sure he hadn't forgotten anything, he walked out into the kitchen.
Hey, Doc, get in here!
You find anybody hiding under the beds?
You better take a look at this.
Bentley saw Blackie's body on the floor, lying in a pool of blood, and Pearlie lying on the bed with his pants on and his nightshirt smeared with blood.
Oh, what the hell is going on here?
Tolliver slowly raised his pistol.
What do you mean? Why are you doing this?
To repay an old debt, Doc. It's really nothing personal.
Tolliver quickly holstered his pistol and bent down and pulled the Doc's watch and money and wallet out of his pockets and stuffed them into Pearlie's pockets, along with his belongings from the bedside table. Then he picked up Pearlie's gun belt and holster and strapped them around Pearlie's waist. He picked Pearlie up and slung him over his shoulder. Moving as quickly as he could, he took Pearlie out the back door and went about 50 yards down the alley, dumping him in a strand of high weeds in a vacant lot. Hurrying back into Bentley's house, he pulled his pistol out and aimed it at Bentley's chest. Tolliver holstered his gun and sprinted out the back door and down the alley toward where he had laid Pearlie in the weeds. As he ran out the door, he never noticed the elderly lady at the top of the stairs in Bentley's house, or the horrified expression on her face as she watched what he'd done. Tolliver squatted down next to Pearlie in the weeds and waited until a sizable crowd had gathered around the Doc's house.
Stop! You there, stop!
He waited a moment, then he slapped Pearlie on the head with the barrel of his pistol.
Help me! I've got the thief over here!
Moments later, when some townsmen came up to him, Tolliver was bending over with his hands on his knees.
I got the son of a bitch who shot the Doc.
What happened?
Me and my deputy, Blackie Johnson, heard the gunshot in the Doc's house. We ran inside to check it out. We found this hombre standing over the Doc's body. Before we could react, he knifed Blackie and ran out the back door.
Why'd he shoot the Doc?
I don't know. I think the Doc caught him trying to steal his money, and they must have had a fight, and the Doc lost. Now pick this rotten bastard up and carry him over to the jail before I shoot him down like the mangy dog he is.
What about Blackie, Buck?
He ain't gonna make it, Sam. The knife cut his throat almost clean through, and he was bleeding like a stuck pig and already dead on his feet when I went out the door after this son of a bitch.
While Tolliver and the townspeople were all out back, watching Pearlie being carried to the jail, Doc Bentley's aunt, Janet Rule, gathered her bags together and snuck out of his house by the front door and walked to the hotel. She'd come to visit her only nephew the week before, but Tolliver hadn't known about it because he was out of town hunting down prospectors to rob. The sleepy-eyed desk clerk came out and let her book a room. He's too sleepy to ask what a respectable woman like her was doing booking a room in the middle of the night. He just handed her a key and turned and went back to his room to get some sleep. He didn't even look at the name she signed on the hotel register. The next morning, Sheriff Tolliver stepped out of his jail to find an angry crowd of citizens milling around in the street and on the boardwalk.
What's going on here?
George Orwell, the president of the bank and one of Payday's leading citizens, held up his right hand with a coiled rope in it.
We're here to see justice is done, Buck. That son of a bitch in there killed our doctor and one of your deputies. For that, he's gonna hang.
Now, George, you know I can't let you do that. Leastways, not till there's been a trial.
Hey, Buck, why don't you just go on over to the saloon and get yourself some breakfast? Me and the good citizens here will watch your jail for you.
Sorry, boys. I know you'd be sure and do a real good job of looking after my prisoner. But I done told you, he ain't gonna be hanged till we've had us a real trial.
Oh, but Buck, it'll take at least 2 or 3 weeks to get a circuit judge up here. And that's only if there's one in the county. Hell, it might even take longer if he's over on the other side of the mountains.
Tolliver nodded slowly, as if he was thinking about what could be done. Though that, too, was in his plans all along.
That's true. Hey, Sam, as mayor, you could call a special trial and appoint some impartial citizens to be on the jury, and we could go on and get on with it right away.
But who'd serve as judge?
Say, didn't that feller Joshua Banks, just came into town a few weeks back from Denver to try his hand at prospecting on Culver Creek, say he was a lawyer before he decided to come out here?
Yeah, that's right, Buck. He told me that when he took out a loan on his prospecting equipment.
Couldn't have been too good a lawyer if he had to take out a loan to buy some picks and shovels.
There's no need for that kind of talk, Bubba. Especially when we're talking about the town's new judge.
All right, Buck. Now we got our judge. What about the defense attorney and the prosecutor?
Well, of course, I'll do the prosecuting since it's my job to keep law and order here in Payday. And I suppose, since you're about the most fair-minded man I know, you can defend the murdering scum, Mayor.
I don't know as that'd be right, Buck. Since I don't exactly believe in this man's innocence, I don't know how good a job I'd be able to do.
Makes no never mind to me, Mayor. You don't want to do it? I guess we can wait 2 weeks or maybe a few months to get the circuit judge here and do it all up nice and proper.
All right, friends. I'll do it. I'll take the job.
Don't worry, Mayor. It'll be a short trial and a quick hanging.
Now, folks, I really must protest this sort of talk. We got to remember the man hasn't been found guilty yet. Let's try to keep neutral until we've heard all the evidence. At least, that's the way things are going to be if you want me to be part of this trial. Otherwise, like Buck said, we can wait for a few weeks, months, for a circuit judge to come up here.
Now, folks, simmer down. You all know Sam is right, and I for one wouldn't want him to have to do anything that went against his grain, even if it did mean he's getting re-elected.
How about setting the trial for tomorrow, Mayor? Assuming we can send somebody out to Banks' claim and get him back here in time to preside?
That should be enough time for me to confer with the accused. That won't give me much time to...
So be it, then. We'll have the trial in the saloon tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. But there'll be no liquor nor beer served until after the guilty verdict is in. And then we'll have time for a couple of quick rounds on the town before we all have to get back to work.
As the crowd began to disperse, Tolliver noticed Robert Jacobson, the man who ran the general store and also minded the town's telegraph office, standing on the periphery.
Hey, Bobby, hold up a minute.
Looks like the town's gonna have a hanging before too long. Of course, it's a real shame about Doc getting killed and all.
Yeah, shame about Blackie too, Bobby.
Of course it was, Buck. I didn't mean no disrespect. It's just that Blackie was...
I know, Bobby. Blackie wasn't exactly the town's most respectable citizen. Still and all, he was my cousin, and he didn't deserve to have some asshole stranger put a knife in his gizzard.
No, of course not.
You hear anything on your telegraph from those friends of his, Bobby?
Yeah, but it was yesterday. Got a wire from Pueblo to the dock about how the man was doing. I ran it over to his office, and he had me wire back the man was still unconscious.
Did they wire back an answer?
Seems I recollect the party in Pueblo wired back that he'd be here within the week to see how his friend was doing, Sheriff.
Tolliver nodded. He was going to have to work fast if he wanted to have the trial over and done with by the time Jensen returned from Pueblo.
All right. You take it easy, Bobby.
Tolliver walked over to the mayor's office.
Howdy, Buck. What can I do for you?
I've been thinking, Mayor. This here Pearly feller was brought into town a few days back by some pretty tough-looking hombres. The boy at the livery even said they looked to him to be gunfighters or some such thing.
Are you saying this Pearly man might also be a gunfighter, Buck?
Yeah, but that's not what's got me worried, Sam. I'm more concerned about what's going to happen if his friends on the Owl Hoot Trail hear he's about to be hung in some small town out in the middle of nowhere.
Just what do you suppose they might do? You think they might try and tree the town?
It's a thought.
What do you think we ought to do about it?
How about if you give me permission to hire me a couple of deputies? Men who are good with guns.
What do you think that'll cost the town, Buck?
A whole lot less than burying half the town if a bunch of gunslicks come in here with murder and mayhem on their minds and try and break their friend out of jail.
All right, Buck. I'll have to clear it with the other members of the town council, of course, but I'm sure they'll see it the same way we do. Who do you have in mind to hire?
Well, I haven't really thought about it yet, but I figured Jerry Hogarth and Bubba Barkley would be good choices. Maybe even Jimmy Akins and Jeb Hardy.
You really think you'll need four more men?
Sam, we got to guard that jail 24 hours a day. Just how many men do you think that'll take? I could work double shifts, but if I'm going to maybe be in a gunfight, I'd hate to be too tired to think or shoot straight if it came to it.
All right, Buck. You make it clear to them that the job is just until the trial is over.
You mean until the trial and the hanging is over?
Now, Buck, I warned you about that. Since I'm going to be defending this man, I want the trial to be on the up and up. And I'm not going to be planning any hanging until the verdict is in.
All right, Sam. I won't start building the scaffold until the jury has spoken.
By the way, when would be a good time for me to interview Pearly? I need to get his side of the story if I'm going to be able to do a good job of defending him.
Oh, any time is all right with me, Mayor. But remember, the man is a killer, so it's probably pretty safe to assume he's a liar as well.
Nevertheless, he deserves to get the chance to give his account of what happened that night.
When Tolliver opened the jail door and led Hemmings into Pearly's cell, the mayor turned with angry eyes on the sheriff.
Why haven't you seen to this man's injuries, Buck?
I ain't no doc, Mayor. And in case you forgot, this bastard killed the only doctor we had in town.
Hemmings shook his head. Tolliver was impossible. The mayor went to sit on the edge of Pearly's bunk. He gently shook Pearly's shoulder.
How are you feeling, young man?
What am I doing in jail? What happened to my head? It feels like I've been hit with an axe handle.
Buck, bring us a pail of water and a dipper, and then I want you to go on over to the saloon and see if Hattie Monroe is up yet.
What do you want Hattie for? I really don't think the man is up to a roll in the hay this morning, Mayor.
Hattie worked as a nurse at an army hospital back in the Civil War, Buck. I want her to take a look at this man's injuries and see if she can help him.
How'd you know that about Hattie, Sam? You two good friends?
We talked about it, Buck. Now go and do what I ask, please.
All right, but I'm gonna have to lock you in while I'm gone, Sam. Wouldn't want the prisoner to try and escape.
Escape? Why, the man can barely talk, let alone overpower me and run off into the mountains on foot and escape. Don't be a fool, Buck.
Still, we gotta be safe now, don't we?
Hattie took one look at Pearly and went into the sheriff's office and put some water on the Franklin stove to boil.
I'm gonna need some clean cloth, some alcohol. The rubbing kind, not the drinking kind. And a needle and thread.
What do you think is wrong with him?
For one thing, he got hit pretty good by the sheriff here, and that was on top of just recovering from what I've been told was a couple of pretty nasty snake bites. And if that's not enough for you, he's got a gash in his scalp that's going to need to be sewn up, and I can only guess if his brains is scrambled or not.
When she finished, she began to dig in a small black valise like doctors carry. When Tolliver had gone to her at the saloon and told her they needed some nursing done, she'd brought her bag with her. The same one she'd carried in the Civil War when she'd treated hundreds of men in the field.
Is he going to be able to stand trial?
He will be if you two get out of here and get me what I asked for and let me get to work fixing him up.
Half an hour later, after she'd shooed the mayor and sheriff out of the cell and had cleansed the dried blood and dirt out of his head wound, Hattie bent over Pearly with a needle and thread in hand.
Now, I'm sorry, mister, but I can't give you no alcohol to numb the pain, not with a head injury like you got.
Pearly.
What?
Pearly. My name's Pearly, miss.
My, aren't you the polite one trying to be a gentleman after all you've been through?
My mother always told me being polite didn't depend on the circumstances. It was just something you did or you didn't do. And she preferred me to do it all the time. I think I still got the backstrap bruises on my hide from when I forgot what she told me.
Well, this ain't a social date, Pearly, so you just lie back and grit your teeth, because this is going to smart a mite.
Just a minute, miss.
Pearly rolled on his side and reached down and unbuckled his belt, causing Hattie to raise her eyebrows. Pearly just smiled wanly as he pulled his belt out and folded it over.
This is something Smoke Jensen taught me once when he had to remove a bullet from my carcass.
And then he stuck the leather between his teeth and clamped down on it. His eyes closed as he laid his head back and nodded, signaling he was ready for her to begin.
Well, I swear.
With that, she began to sew Pearly's wound shut. Later, after she'd finished sewing up Pearly's head and done the best she could with his other wounds, she stuck her head into Tolliver's office.
I'm done in here, Mayor Hemmings.
Hemmings got up from his chair in front of Tolliver's desk and walked back into the room holding Pearly's cell.
I hear you're going to be defending him in court. He sure don't seem like a man capable of cold-blooded murder, Mayor.
What do you mean, Hattie?
Over the past few years working in saloons like I have been doing, Mayor, I've gotten so I can read man pretty good. You have to learn that in my profession or you can get pretty badly hurt. Anyway, that man in there has a gentle soul, and he is a gentleman. I think he could kill if he thought the person he was up against deserved it or he was pushed into it, but I don't for a minute believe he'd kill someone like Dr. Bentley who'd help him out for a few dollars and a gold watch.
But Hattie, the sheriff said he saw him do it.
And you think Buck Tolliver is so high and mighty he ain't never lied? You come see me, Sam, or we can talk private-like, and I'll tell you some things about Buck that'll curl your toes.
She jerked back, her eyes wide with fright, when Tolliver strolled through the door and eyed her suspiciously.
You about done in here, Hattie? Because if you are, I'm sure they have need of you over at the saloon.
Without looking at Hemmings again, Hattie ducked her head and moved past Tolliver, shrugging to the side as she passed him in the doorway so their bodies wouldn't touch.
If it wasn't for what they carry between their legs, there'd be a hunt season on them.
Disgusted by Tolliver's crudity, Hemmings walked down the hall to Pearly's cell.
I need to talk to this man alone, Sheriff.
I don't know, Mayor. He might be dangerous now that Hattie's fixed him up and he's feeling better.
I think I can handle a man who's had his head half caved in and can barely sit up in bed, Buck.
All right, Sam, don't get your dander up.
And you might see about rustling up some grub and water for the prisoner, Buck. Unless you're planning on starving him to death before the trial.
Tolliver just shook his head as he turned and walked down the corridor towards his office, thinking they'd be wanting him to get some lace curtains for the bastard cell next. Hemmings looked around the cell, and since there was no other place to sit, he eased down on the edge of Pearly's bunk bed, down by his feet.
Now, Pearly, there are some things you need to know. Dr. Bentley and another man named Blackie Johnson were killed the other night at the doc's house. The sheriff says he saw you standing over the doctor's dead body, and when he and Blackie walked in, you stabbed Blackie and hightailed it out and back down the alley until the sheriff ran you down and knocked you out. I need you to tell me what you say happened that night.
You mean when I caught that man going through my things?
You mean Dr. Bentley was going through your things?
Well, I don't know any Dr. Bentley. Last thing I remember before waking up to find a tall man with booze on his breath rifling my things was being bitten by a snake up in the mountains.
So your story is when you found this man in your room, you shot him to keep him from stealing your things?
No, I didn't shoot no one. The hombre pointed his gun at me and I grabbed it. We struggled and fell to the floor. I was able to get my knife out of my gun belt and stab the sumbitch just before he could shoot me in the head. Last I remember, he was lying next to my bed with blood everywhere. Then I must have passed out. When I come to, I was lying right here where you see me, and a nice lady was fixing to sew my head back together.
But that doesn't make any sense, young man. The doc was shot.
and then Blackie Johnson was stabbed.
I done told you, mister, I didn't shoot nobody. And I sure as hell didn't hear no gunshot before I woke up. The man I stabbed had the beginnings of a beard, like he hadn't shaved in a few days. And he stunk of sweat like he hadn't bathed in a month, and he smelled of alcohol like he'd been drinking a lot that night. Funny how about all I remember about him is the god-awful stench on him. That's all I can tell you. Except to say again, I didn't shoot nobody. I done the stabbing, but 'twas in self-defense. I could see it in his eyes, Mr. Hemmings. That man meant to kill me as sure as I'm laying here in this here jail.
You get some sleep. The sheriff will be back in a while.
You know, Mr. Hemmings, for about the first time in my life, I can honestly say I ain't a bit hungry.
Janet Rule eased down the stairs in the hotel, going slowly and making sure that she didn't see any sign of the sheriff looking for her. Maybe she'd get lucky and be able to get out of town before he realized she'd been staying with her nephew. She knew she didn't have long before some busybody told him she'd been there, so she had to make tracks. She knew she didn't dare go back home to her house in Pueblo, because once Tolliver realized she'd been in the house that night and might have seen him, he'd either come for her or send someone to Pueblo to make sure she wasn't able to testify against him. She did not understand why someone would want to kill her nephew. He was such a kind man who only cared about helping people. Sure, he'd had his trouble with the bottle, but in the last couple of days of his life, he'd seemed to be getting that under control. What a shame to be cut down in the prime of life like that for no good reason that she could think of. In her 70s, she knew she could never ride a horse all the way to some other town, and the thought of trying to drive a buckboard or Surrey that far didn't appeal to her neither. And if she tried to buy a ticket on the next train, the station master would be sure to remember her if Tolliver came asking, which he was sure to do once he found out she'd been Hezekiah's house guest at the time he killed him. At the foot of the stairs, she glanced around, and seeing no one who seemed overly interested in her movements, she slipped into the dining room. It was still very early, and the place was almost deserted except for her and a young boy in his teens who was mopping the floors. She sat at a table near where he was working and opened her purse, extracting a handful of bills. When she got a chance, she motioned him over to her.
Yes, ma'am? The waitress is out back helping to cook with the morning's biscuits. She'll be here in a few minutes.
Young man, how would you like to make $5?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Take this money on over to the train station and buy me a ticket on the next train out.
Where do you want to go?
It doesn't matter. Just get me a seat on the very next train leaving. But you've got to do it without raising any suspicions or getting the attention of the station master.
Are you in trouble, ma'am?
Yes, son. There's a man who is threatening to hurt me because I owe him some money. If I don't get out of town fast and without anyone knowing where I've gone, I'm afraid he's going to beat me.
Oh, you can count on me, ma'am. I'll run right over there and get your ticket for you.
Thank you, sonny. Thank you so much.
Robert Jacobson walked into Sheriff Tolliver's office.
Hey, Buck!
He stopped short when he saw that Tolliver was deep in conversation with some other men.
Yeah, Bobby? What is it?
I got another wire from that fellow we were talking about the other day.
Tolliver glanced at Hogg Hogarth, Bubba Barkley, Kid Akins, and Jeb Hardy, who were all sitting around his desk.
Oh, don't worry about these men, Bobby. They know all about how I'm looking into that matter.
Relieved, Jacobson handed the sheriff the wire, even though it was addressed to Doc Bentley and wasn't supposed to be given to anyone else according to the rules of the telegraph company. Jacobson told himself it was all right since the doc was dead and the sheriff was in charge of prosecuting the man who killed him.
Here it is, Buck. Man said he was leaving Pueblo and headed this way immediately, and for Doc to do whatever he could to keep his friend alive until he got here.
Did the wire say if the man who sent it was waiting for a reply?
Yeah. Now that you mention it, he is.
Good. Just send back that nothing has changed and the man is still unconscious. Sign the Doc's name.
Well, now, Buck, I can't hardly do that. It's not only against the law, it's against the rules of the company I work for. I could get fired if they find out.
Buck got to his feet and reached into his pocket and pulled out a $5 bill. He folded it over into a small square, and then he stuck it in Jacobson's shirt pocket.
And you could get a lot worse than fired if you don't do what I tell you to, Bobby. You understand me? This here is a murder investigation, and I expect my orders to be carried out to the letter and without question. Is there anything about that you do not understand?
Sure, Buck, sure. I didn't mean nothing by it. I'll go and get that wire right off.
Good. Because I wouldn't want Mr. Smoke Jensen to have to wait on word of what's going on with his dear friend.
After Jacobson left, Tolliver went back to his desk and sat down, leaning back and putting his feet up on the corner and his hands behind his head. The trial was supposed to start the next day, and it was at least a 3-day ride to payday from Pueblo if you pushed it. Hog Hogarth's eyes opened wide.
Buck? You say that galoot that brought that snake bit man into town is Smoke Jensen? Smoke Jensen, the famous gunfighter that's killed over 200 men?
That's right, Hog. Why? Does it matter to you one way or the other?
Not really, Buck.
The hell it don't. I got to tell him now, Hog, considering who it is we went up against.
Tell me what?
You remember when Hog and me came in from being out on the trail and Hog was all crippled up?
Yeah, you said he fell off his horse.
Well, that weren't exactly the entire truth of the matter. In point of fact, Hog and me braced the two men bringing that sick man into town. Words was said and Hog got into a fist fight with the big man wearing buckskins. The man you now tell us was Smoke Jensen.
You mean to tell me Smoke Jensen beat the crap out of Hog and it was a fair fight? Jensen didn't cheat or anything?
Hell no, Buck. That Jensen is one mean son of a bitch.
But he's older than dirt. Hell, he must be pushing 45 or 50.
I don't give a shit if he's 150. The man is built like an ox and fights like a grizzly bear. And I, for one, don't have any intention of ever tangling with that man. Leastways, not in a fair fight.
Jeb Hardy took a cigar out of his jacket pocket, licked the length of it, and then he put it in his mouth and chewed on it without lighting it.
How long you gonna let this Jensen thing distract you, Buck? Every day you sit around here messing around with this Pearly character trying to get to Jensen, we're losing money.
I'm gonna do whatever it takes to first make Jensen's life a living hell, Jeb, and then I'm gonna kill him. If you don't like it, there ain't nothing you can do about it.
Hardy's eyes flashed and he straightened in his chair, his right hand automatically pulling back the right edge of his jacket to expose his peacemaker Colt hanging on his hip.
Oh, you don't think so?
Tolliver felt a stab of fear course through his chest, and he thought his heart skipped a beat. Hardy was the fastest man with a gun he'd ever seen, and he certainly wasn't afraid to use it, having killed at least 15 men that Tolliver knew about, and no telling how many others he didn't know about.
Now, Jeb, don't get your dander up. You know I've got a heavy score to settle with Jensen. I've been waiting plumb near all my life to do it.
That's so, Buck. But it don't give you no call to talk to me like some hired hand, neither.
No offense meant, Jeb. We've been friends too long to let something like this come between us.
Hell with friendship. I'm talking about business, and when we're gonna get back down to it.
Well, the trial starts tomorrow, and it shouldn't last more than a day. Two at the most. Jensen should get here about 3 days from now, about when I'm ready to hang his friend. I might let him stew for another day, and then I'm going to hang his friend right in front of him and kill him right after that.
You sure you're going to be able to take Jensen, Buck?
Hell, I reckon I can, kid. Jensen was full-grown when he shot my brother, and that was more than 20 years ago. I guess he must be close to 45 by now, and years piled up on a man who's lived as rough a life as Jensen will tend to make him a mite slower than he was when he was young and full of piss and vinegar.
From what I've seen that old man do to Hog with his bare hands, Buck, I wouldn't be too sure about him slowing down a whole hell of a lot.
I don't know either, Buck. From what I hear when I talk to some of my friends from back when I used to hire my gun out, even though Jensen's retired, word is he's still pretty damn fast. Hell, I heard tell he killed a whole parcel of men up in Canada a year or so back. That don't sound like the work of a slow old man to me.
Well, if Jensen kills me, I guess I'm just gonna have to depend on my friends here around this table to take him out for me.
Now, why would we risk going up against a man as fast as Jensen just to avenge your death, Buck? Sure as hell wouldn't bring you back to life now, would it?
Tolliver mulled this over for a minute, Then he took pen and paper out of his desk. He bent over and spent another couple of minutes writing, and then he held up the paper for all the men to see.
Here's a good reason, Jeb. I've just written out my will, leaving all of my assets to the man who kills Smoke Jensen. And I guess you all know that I've managed to put away quite a nice bundle over the past few years we've been stealing claims.
Just how much we talking about, Buck? Not that I think Jensen's gonna kill you or nothing, but just in case I happen to go up against him again, I'd kinda like to know what I'm gonna gain by killing the bastard.
I'd guess what with the land and gold claims and all, it'd be close to $500,000, Hog. And it'll all go to the man who plants Smoke Jensen in the ground.
You know, of course, a will like that ain't exactly legal, Buck.
Oh, I'll have my lawyer in Pueblo write it up all nice and legal-like. And since he'll be the executor of my will, he'll know exactly what I want him to do.
Well, I could write that will up for you, Buck, seeing as how I still got my license to practice law.
No offense, Jeb, but I'd just as soon not everyone know about what I got stashed away and where. Leastways, not while I'm still alive.
Well, not to wish anyone bad luck, Buck, but I will say that if Jensen does somehow get the best of you, I'll take the sumbitch down myself.
You'll have to stand in line for that kind of money, Jeb, old son.
The hell with shooting him. I'll just wring the bastard's neck.
Yeah, just like you did last time you went up against him, huh, Hog?
He tricked me, that's all. He tripped me when I wasn't looking.
In the Pueblo Telegraph office, Smoke took the wire from the telegraph operator and frowned as he read it.
Bad news?
Yeah, but not as bad as it could be. Pearlie's not awake yet, and the doctor says there's been no change in his condition.
So at least it's not getting any worse.
That's right, Cal. Let's keep our hopes up as we ride. Now remember, Pearlie's a fighter. He won't go down easily.
Damn right. How long you reckon it'll take us to get back to Payday without running a string of horses?
3 days by the trail. We can cut a full day off that by cutting through a couple of mountain passes I remember from my days up in these parts with Preacher.
You think those passes will be open this early?
They will be after we go through them.